I can just imagine somebody sitting at the table with their hands over their face, just rocking back and forth, going, "Do I take 19, or do I let the 18 damage go through, or do I take like 12 from?" And then their head explodes, and then the tournament ends because, you know, it's pretty messy.
Wasn't that you last weekend?
That was like earlier today.
Oh. Okay.
Ugh. Welcome to episode 10 of the Prep Area here on the Reserve Pool Network. I'm RJ Retro alongside the nefarious geneticist Shadowmeld, and I want to congratulate you, not to the point where you'll get a medal or even a plaque, even a participation ribbon, not in your future, but I will say congratulations on making me care about a character that I didn't even bother to learn. Even after I pulled the rare, I thought, eh. Okay, now I actually am excited for this character, so congratulations.
Thanks, I guess.
Yeah, I'm referring to Starhawk, by the way, which is what we've built two teams around this week. The rare, the Starhawk Precognitive from Age of Ultron. We're going to get super in-depth with this card first with our economy team, which is a Guardians team. And then later on in this episode, we will talk about a very sweet team that's called Swarm Hawk, which is, one, a great name, and two, based on the people that Shadowmeld has had to play against with this team, it's also a very unfun team to play against. I can certainly tell you it's certainly fun to play if you are the one using it and not having to face it. So we'll talk about Swarm Hawk in a little bit, but first we'll get right into the Guardians team. It's an economy team. Starhawk's the only rare on this. We've got three uncommons and four commons. So we'll start off with one of the commons, a very good one, from Age of Ultron. Three dice on the card. Black Widow Natasha, 2-cost mask, Avenger affiliation. Black Widow can't be blocked unless your opponent spins down one of their character dice. Shadowmeld, you've been a big supporter of this card from the very moment it was released. What makes it so good on this team?
On this team, she's just a cheap Avenger that can combo with the Starhawk ability and get a buff and attack through and go in unblockable and just do it over and over and over and over again. She also is a 2-cost mask character in case your opponent brings Professor Xavier. So as a nod to that Professor X global, Black Widow's here to you know, be what you buy if your goal is a 2-drop character and 2 masks. You know, if you get lucky enough to get 3 masks, she's a perfect first turn.
You also talk about comboing with other characters. This character would work really well with Black Widow. This is the Rocket Raccoon. Blam! Murdered you! From the Age of Ultron set. 3 dice on the card. 3-cost Bolt, Guardians of the Galaxy affiliation. A common. When Rocket Raccoon attacks with at least one of their character, he gets +2 attack.
Yeah, this guy's attack stat is crazy if he's not attacking alone. He's a 2-3-4 normally. That makes him a 4-5-6, and you bought him for 3. Yeah, his defense stats are relatively low, only 1-2-2, but if you can find some way to protect and support him or not care and just attack and hopefully he trades with something, then you're perfect. You're doing great. He's just a ton of aggression in a little tiny package.
And a fielding cost of 0-1-1, which is a lot of fun as well. So we will continue with the combo connection here of Guardians of the Galaxy. Groot Protector, the uncommon from the Age of Ultron set. 2 dice on the card. 4-cost shield. While Groot is active, each time an affiliated character takes damage, reduce that damage by 1.
So we were just talking about finding a way to protect Rocket Raccoon from getting pinged off when he only has like 1, 2, or 3 hit points. If you reduce the damage Rocket takes from every source of damage by 1, you can't use things like the Magic Missile Global to ping Rocket Raccoon off the board. You can't use the Wasp Global, which is pretty popular lately, to ping Rocket Raccoon off the board. So this group gives you that protection if you're going heavy Rocket attacks. And he also... this group... has the potential to be an amazing card in that you can give him any affiliation and his ability applies to those characters. It's not like he says your guardian characters reduce damage by one. No, it's any affiliation. And so if we say make Groot a villain, all of our villains have their attack reduced by one.
We will get into a way to make Groot a villain should we wish to in just a little bit. But first, we are going to talk about a character from the Justice League. Blue Beetle, magically infused, 4-cost bolt, 2 dice on the card. Whenever one of your sidekicks is KO'd, Blue Beetle gets +2 attack until the end of the turn. This is the uncommon from the Justice League set.
So we have a strategy in this team where we're going to do 1 damage to everything, and that will buff Blue Beetle up to a ridiculously high damage potential if we had a bunch of sidekicks fielded. So he's on here just in case that happens to be a repetitive pattern so that we can get one big, large, super attacker going. And that's kind of if we run into somebody who brings Overcrush for us and we try to, like, say, buy their Hulkouts from them. Blue Beetle gives us a way to bring a character. But to be honest, Blue Beetle's on this team. He's mostly a flex pick. You could replace him with whatever you need to counter your local meta. He's not a necessary portion of this team.
He also helps with the bolts that we're going to be wanting with certain global abilities, and we will get into that very shortly. But first, actually, no, this is one of those bolt globals. Iron Man Tinhead, 4-cost bolt, Avenger-affiliated character from Age of Ultron, 2 dice on the card. Iron Man gets +1 attack for each opposing active villain. Global, pay a bolt to make one character a villain until the end of the turn. Again, this is the common from the Age of Ultron set.
This guy has ridiculous stats for a 4-cost character. He's 4 attack, 4 attack, 6 attack on his levels, and on top of that, you can pay a bolt to give him +1 attack by making something a villain. And that's assuming your opponent doesn't already have villains. So he brings his own invulnerability global with him, effectively. He also, like we said, can make Groot a villain and then make somebody else a villain. And now that person is protected. So if you make all the Avengers on this team villains and Groot a villain, then your Avengers are protected from Groot's ability. So that's pretty nifty.
Here is another Avenger on this team, Captain Marvel, Human Kree Hybrid from Age of Ultron, 2 dice on the card, uncommon, 5-cost shield. When Captain Marvel deals combat damage, spin all of your character dice up 1 level.
This Captain Marvel is part of our combo win condition. We have just aggressive, fast-paced punch people in the face, but if that's not working for us, we have another combo win condition that we can work on. And this Captain Marvel is part of that, in that we attack with her and we spin up all of our other characters so that they're not level 1. Even just getting through once with her and doing any damage to anything is great for us, because then we can spin all of our characters up. And they're not level 1, and then when we use our Stinking Cloud, they can all attack and block, unlike our opponent's characters.
Yeah, Stinking Cloud, we're not there yet, but we are almost there. Still a few characters to talk about. I mentioned this at the very beginning of this episode. I could not care less about Starhawk. I could try and care less. I would be unsuccessful. But that was before this team was created. Now we are going to talk about how this rare Starhawk, Precognitive, from the Age of Ultron set, is a very interesting card. 3 dice on the card, 4-cost mask, both Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy affiliation. Team Watch, when you field a character who shares an affiliation with Starhawk, that character and Starhawk both get +2 attack this turn.
So the way Team Watch works is whatever affiliation Starhawk is, in this case Avengers and Guardians, anytime you field one of those characters, Starhawk gets +2 attack, and that character gets +2 attack. If you have multiple Starhawks, each Starhawk die gets +2 attack for each character you field. But the character that's fielded still only gets +2. So it's not like he gets a +2 for each Starhawk. It's 1 +2 for each die for every fielding. On the other hand, we can add, say, villain affiliation to Starhawk, and we could, say, replace Blue Beetle with some villain that we think is pretty cool, and that would combo well with this team as well. So any affiliation that it matches Starhawk's is a good combination on this team. for this particular deck, we're probably going to look to get a Starhawk, put him on the field, and then attack with Black Widow, attack with Rocket, attack with Black Widow, Captain Marvel, and just field guys, attack with them, field guys, attack with them, field guys, attack with them, rinse and repeat over and over and over again. And by doing that, we're just putting a ton of pressure on our opponent, and we're leaving Starhawk behind to act as a vendor because his stats are 3-3, 4-4, 5-5. So it's a pretty solid defensive character for only 4 cost. And we don't need to attack with them unless we're pushing in for a lethal.
One final character to talk about. This one's from the Uncanny X-Men set, and its global is one of the best in the game, in my opinion, if you are trying to do something with bolts. Iceman, too cool for words, from the starter set. 2 dice on the card, 5 cost bolt, X-Men affiliation. Once per turn, you may pay a bolt to double Iceman's attack. Well, that's kind of cool. Here's the global. Pay a bolt to spin any number of your sidekick dice to their bolt side. If active, move them to your reserve pool. And that counts for sidekicks we have in the field.
Yeah, we're probably not going to buy Iceman, although we very well could. Iceman by himself, along with the invulnerability global, is a win condition. Just those 2 dice. But he doesn't really synergize with the rest of the team, so we're unlikely to buy him. But with that global, we can turn all of our sidekicks before we mentioned we were going to Stinking Cloud. We can turn all of our sidekicks to bolts before we Stinking Cloud, and then we have all these bolts to pump characters with or to buy characters with immediately. And so it's a nice, solid combination when we are already planning on board wiping all of the 1-1 characters.
You have mentioned both basic actions already, so I will just read them here. First off, from the Dungeons & Dragons set, by far the best basic actions in the game, I think, came from this set. And this is one I haven't really messed around with too much. Stinking Cloud, deal 1 damage to all characters. Both players, level 1 characters, can't attack or block this turn, and it costs 2 to buy. The other one from the AVX set, Invulnerability, also costs 2. Your attacking characters that are knocked out this turn return to the field. Global, pay a bolt, 1 target character gets +1 attack until the end of the turn.
Yeah, absolutely. So the combo that I mentioned earlier when I was talking about Captain Marvel is that we use Black Widow Natasha to attack, and she's a 3 attack or 4 attack character, so our opponent's going to want to block, so he's going to start spinning his characters down to block her. And then if we start using Stinking Cloud to prevent characters from blocking, and we've attacked once with Captain Marvel, so all of our characters are level 2. Our opponent's level 1 characters can't block us because Natasha's doing her job, and then all of our characters go through unblocked, and they can all attack because they're all level 2. So it's just enough spinning mechanic between those 2 characters to make Stinking Cloud an effective board wipe. And what's great about it is, as such an effective board wipe, it only cost us 2 generic energy to purchase. So that just helps us smooth out our purchase turns so we can pick it up when we can. We don't have to go out of our way to save up to buy it.
Now, we talked about this a little bit before about what you would do on your first turn if you got a certain type of role. So let's just quickly go through them here as well. What are some of the ways that you would play this team on your first turn?
So if there's a Professor X out there, you're obviously going to want to do Natasha and 2 masks. If there's not, you may want to go straight for the Starhawk. And then say there's a Resurrection on the board, right? So Starhawk on turn 1, Rocket Raccoon on turn 2, and then Resurrect, so you get them both on turn 3. That would be awesome. If there's not a Resurrect or anything like that, then, you know, start fielding sidekicks because you don't have a ridiculous amount of ramp, and sidekicks actually work out to combo with Iceman later. So the more you can get fielded, the sooner you can get fielded, the better. So try and reroll for sidekicks. You know, turn 1, save a mask, reroll. If you get sidekicks, great. If you don't, buy Starhawk. If you do get sidekicks, hopefully it's like 2 sidekicks and you buy a Natasha and you feel like you've thinned your bag by 1 and bought 1 character die. So you're already ahead of your opponent. But yeah, so depending on what ramp is available, either Natasha or Starhawk should be one of your priority purchases.
Just to throw this at you, obviously, if you roll four fists, you're probably buying an invulnerability and a stinking cloud. If you roll three fists and a shield, are you picking up Groot?
I don't see a reason not to. If Groot is getting a buff from Starhawk, he's a 3-attack, 4-attack, 5-attack character that you only paid 4 for. So that's a solid stat line, and he's unlikely to die.
Yeah, Groot is super solid and much like... I don't want to spoil the movie, but it's very difficult to get Groot off the field. Let's just put it that way. So that is what we call our Guardians team, the economy team for this week. I'm going to take a few minutes off here as Shadowmeld will take you into his laboratory to teach you all about another Guardian character that can be very helpful if, let's say, you are not a fan of the Yu-Gi-Oh! Set. That's as much of a hint as you're going to get. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Prep Area here on the Reserve Pool Network.
Welcome to Shadowmeld's Laboratory, where today I take a page out of my friend Thanos' book and breed myself an assassin to kill all of my opponents. Today, we're going to be talking about Gamora, raised by Thanos from the Age of Ultron set. She's a four-cost fist character and a member of the Guardians of the Galaxy. She has an ability, Team Watch. Whenever you field a character who shares an affiliation with Gamora, choose an opposing die. It must block one of your Gamora dice, if able. But that's not really why we're going to be using this beautiful, beautiful assassin. No, instead we're going to be using her for her global. This is the only Gamora that has this global, and I think this global can fill a niche that people have been looking for in the superhero metagame that has previously only been taken up by Blue Eyes White Dragon in the Unlimited meta. The global is Pay a Fist. KOA blocked or blocking die after damage is dealt. One way you could use this character is when you attack and you get blocked by a character you can't kill, you can pay a fist to cause that character that's blocking you to die after damage has been exchanged. Another way to use it is if you're blocking, you can do the same thing. Block a character you couldn't kill otherwise. But that's pretty straightforward. It's pretty obvious. Let's look at some other ways we could use this. If we synergized this global with, say, Distraction, we could attack, force one of their characters to block, distract our character back, and then pay a fist to cause our opponent to lose that character anyway. So for the cost of a fist and a mask, we kill one character on our opponent's side. Now, if that was a sidekick, not so great. Other ways we could use it is we could force our opponent's character to attack into us and then use the fist to cause it to die after we, say, block with a sidekick. And then there are some other characters who might be exceptional for the way they interact with this global. Like I mentioned earlier, this global is a good replacement for Blue Eyes in a superhero-only type of a format. You can use this global as a kind of funky replacement for what you would normally use Blue Eyes, White Dragon's global for. And what you would do is you would bring, say, Rare Solomon Grundy. You would attack with Rare Solomon Grundy, and your opponent would either block with a sidekick or block with a character that they don't want Grundy to kill. But what you could do is then pay a fist, and the sidekick would die to Grundy's damage. And then Grundy would die to the fist effect and trigger and then kill whatever character it is you were looking to get rid of anyway. Then, of course, you could do it the other way around, and you could block something weak, like a sidekick with Grundy, and then pay the fist to KO Grundy and kill one of their characters that didn't even attack. So if you, say, force one of their sidekicks to attack, block with Grundy, you ended up killing a sidekick and, say, maybe their Human Torch on the other side of the board that you were able to just KO. So Grundy has a good interaction with this global. It's not as straightforward as the way he interacts with Blue Eyes, but it has a way to work. Some other characters that might be good with this would be Green Arrow, former mayor, Darkseid Immortal. You would attack with him. Your opponent would not want him to die because he would then nuke two other characters, except you're going to pay a fist and Darkseid's going to nuke two other characters one way or another. Any of the Red Skulls from the Age of Ultron set would be amazing guys to use with this because Red Skull's got decent defense. You can attack with him. Your opponent really doesn't want him to KO and trigger his effect, but you can pay the fist. And if you miss a Red Skull, that's just more fists you get. Also the Uncommon Beast that says if he dies while attacking, you gain 2 life. So it's a pretty pay one fist, gain 2 life. It's pretty pretty solid combination. All in all, I think this global is a really great global for bringing on a stalling control type of team that you're already thinking about bringing things like distraction or force attack globals on. So that's something to keep in mind. Now, of course, it can always be used against you. So standard global small print applies. Bring your human paladin, field your human paladin, bring your ring of magnetism, put it on something that you don't mind dying. Things like that. Any way you have that can protect you from a global is a good way to combo with this global so that you can use it to the utmost effect. This has been Shadow Melds Laboratory. Hopefully you've enjoyed this global and this wonderful assassin. See you next time.
Welcome to another episode of The Transition Zone, where we will continue a series looking at the ins and outs of the competitive and organized play scene outside of just building decks and how you can transition yourself from the casual kitchen table player to the competitive. Now that you've thought, let's go try and play out in the wild, where or how do you start? There are events pages, things on Facebook, meetups, WizKid event pages, or just walking into your store and looking for a game. If you've had luck and found a store that offers organized play events, the next step is to figure out what type of events you want to play in. Many stores will offer different avenues of play at them, and the more successful the stores become in attracting new people, the more likely you'll get a variety of play styles, teams, or combos. This will all be a part of your meta, but what do you do when you see the different styles posted and you don't quite know what they mean? Maybe you don't have a strong Magic the Gathering background or other CCGs, and the terms are foreign to you. Today I'd like to help you get a better understanding of the formats you may run into and what their definitions are when it comes to playing Dice Masters. Almost all the current categories of formats will fit into one of two areas, either constructed or limited play. Today I want to go through what constructed play is and give you examples of what you might see in those categories. Straight constructed formats allow you to bring a team that you've already put together. You do the work at home and you bring the team with you to an event. You need to have the cards and the rest of your dice already in your personal collection. This will allow you to put the team together and tweak or test it as needed on your own. Examples include unlimited or standard constructed. Right now it can be said of a game that we're playing a standard or unlimited constructed format. That means all cards from all sets are allowed, and as tournament rules apply, your team should have a maximum of 8 filled spots with 20 dice at most and 2 basic action cards. This format allows for all cards that have been released up until now, including promotional cards, to be included. As per tournament rules, it should be pointed out that a card needs to be out in the general public for at least 1 week to be legal for tournament play in a constructed format. In set constructed looks like just focusing on one set that's been released. That may be an all AVX game, or an all D&D game, or an all Age of Ultron game. Most of these games focus on playing with the basic actions that were in that set. You're most likely to see in-set constructed games focused on the most recently released set available. Little Cup is a format that allows for only commons and starter cards to be used, along with any types of basic action cards. Championed by our own RJ Retro, this format will allow the use of cards from any set as long as you stick to starters and commons. Doubles format is a constructed play that requires you and a partner to play against another team for a 2-on-2 action. Life totals are increased to 30 for each side, and each player should have a team of 4 characters and 1 basic action to combine with their teammates' 4 cards and 1 basic action. In doubles, the max number of dice are allowed for all cards, even if that brings your team above 20 dice. And the last type of thing you may run into when it comes to constructed format is a theme. Most stores will run events running a theme to construct. This will follow the same 8 cards, max of 20 dice setup, but will focus on themes such as all affiliated characters, or all of one color such as a 2-hued feud, or all characters who have dated Jean Grey, or something of that sort. Next time on The Transition Zone, we will discuss limited format and how you may run into that in the stores you play in. Thanks for listening, and until next time, this is Isaac, bringing you The Transition Zone.
Hey everybody, it's Dave here, Editor-in-Chief of The Reserve Pool. I'm coming to you because I need to tell you about all the exciting stuff that's going to be happening on The Reserve Pool podcast this week. we have War of Light spoilers. Yes, we do. In fact, we have all 8 super rares, and we're going to tell you about every single one of them. We also have a top 10 list of our favorite cards that you're going to find in the foil packs, other than those fantastic super rares. And in case you don't believe me, I'm going to tell you about some of the words that are on those super rare cards. For example, on one card you will find the word "the." Find out more exciting information about that and more War of Light cards and coverage with thereservepool.com as well as the Reserve Pool Podcast. We'll see you on Thursday.
And welcome, everybody, to another week of Off the Meta. The Prep Area podcast is finally getting a taste of what it means to go weekly, and I hope you're all enjoying it. Now that we've finally finished up with Justice League, we've got a short window to return to an even spread of all the sets before War of Light drops, and then I spend some time on Age of Ultron now that the meta has settled. Taking advantage of this time slot is Cytorax Chosen, Juggernaut. This beefy bruiser is all about those heavy attack stats, having a higher level 1 attack than any other character in the game except Hulks and the most mythic of monsters from the fantasy sets. He's also very reliable attack-wise, only hitting his max of 7 right at level 2. This means that he doesn't need levels to be effective and can work really well in the early game, especially when combined with Polymorph. Because of that early and aggressive nature, we're going to be focusing on Juggernaut Kurth. Purchased for a lowly 5 shields, he barely requires any ramp at all and has the single highest attack stat of any 5-cost character in the entire game, period. That means we can use a single prep global and purchase him on turn 2 while also accelerating our turn 1 purchase. This is going to mean we have an incredibly versatile beatstick right from the gate, and this will allow us to hopefully take control of the game. His effect, on the other hand, is something of a wash. Despite his name, his effect is working off the archvillain mechanic, in that it is only in effect when your opponent has no villains fielded. When this ability procs, well, he's allowed to declare blocks against 2 dice instead of 1. While not a massively helpful ability, it can assist you in early walling, and if your opponent isn't running villains, it's purely extra utility on top of an already heavy body. If you really want to make use of it and stomp players without villains, you can put Villainous Pact on top of it all. This provides the prep global you need to get Juggernaut early, and can also work for being bought and absolutely wiping your opponent's blockers off the field. Paired with even slight removal, that's going to mean you can go completely unblocked, and with a character that's guarantees 6 plus damage, you're not going to have a problem edging out the game. As mentioned before, Juggernaut works really well with Polymorph because of his low variance stats. Besides that, any effect that can get him onto the field without paying his fielding cost is going to be quite strong. Specifically, Atomica is a brilliant character to pair with Juggernaut, effectively cutting his fielding cost in half. This means that even if we don't manage to polymorph him out, Atomica can keep him coming in for cheap. You could also polymorph Atomica onto the field in order to guarantee a free fielding cost if you have some sort of global protection against Magic Missile. Due to Kurth's shield nature, he also is a great pair with Transfer Power. If you don't have him in the used pile to swap in for a sidekick, you can always transfer his attack onto an unblocked sidekick. This will take 2 shields, but if you have any sort of protection, it's an unstoppable way to get through for heavy damage, and works especially well if using Villainous Pact alongside in order to limit blockers and thus your own offensive investment. This heavy focus on action dice, cost mitigation, and globals go a long way to establishing Juggernaut's theme. He's a beefy character, but at the same time, rather brainless. He's really just about swinging in constantly, and can't do much other than that. However, you're the mastermind in this game, and it's up to you to put him to good use. It's your job as the master to his blaster to direct him effectively and abuse the massive damage he offers. Juggernaut isn't a simple I win character. He's a tool for you to leverage in order to force your opponent out of the game. And if you can do that, you can rest assured it was because of your own skill and strategy rather than the strength of your characters. If you find your opponent bringing Juggernaut, you'd best be sure to have some sort of villain on board. The two strongest versions of Juggernaut both function as archvillains, so that one piece of the puzzle will already be mitigating their effects entirely. Other than that, it's important to bring removal to the table. Juggernaut's biggest weakness is his fielding cost, so if you can make your opponent pay it over and over, then you're going to be taking a massive lead. It's also worthwhile to invest in anti-action dice such as Constantine or Doomcalibur Knight, as Juggernaut heavily relies on the tricks those dice allow him in order to function. Starve your opponent of energy, and he'll have lost all momentum. If you'd like to see more on Juggernaut's multiple other versions, I invite you to visit the blog section of the Reserve Pool site. It's full of interesting and well-thought-out articles all written by the community for your reading pleasure. Later on this week, I'll even be posting an article on exactly how I'd build a full team to complement Juggernaut and show off his immense strength, so come on down and maybe even write an article of your own. Thank you all so much for listening, and have a great day.
We are back on the prep area here on the Reserve Pool Network, RJ Retro and Shadow Meld. The nefarious geneticist has found another way to make Starhawk super fun to play. We call this team Swarmhawk. So obviously the first character you know that is going to be on this team is the Swarm Master himself, the uncommon kobold from the Dungeons & Dragons set. Four dice on the card, one cost fist. Swarm, of course, must attack if your opponent controls any adventurers. At least one adventurer must block this kobold if able. No surprise to see kobold on a swarm team.
Nope, not at all. By the way, the kobold is also evil and equipable, but we're not going to be utilizing either of those in this team. So swarm. Some people may have some questions on how swarm works or what swarm does. So instead of talking about the kobold specifically, who, by the way, has no fielding cost and is a 1-1 or a 1-2 at level 3, basically, swarm, if you have one character that has a swarm keyword and he's in the field and you draw another swarm character during your clear and draw step that is the same swarm character, it's really important, it has to be the same swarm character, then that die effectively doesn't count as a draw. You draw an extra die because of that trigger. So let's just say I have one kobold in the field and I draw four dice, two of which are kobolds. I draw two extra dice so that I have a total of four non-kobold dice. And then I have the two kobolds that I drew. So for all intents and purposes, the way I look at it when I'm playing Swarm is kobold dice don't count as one of my four dice for the turn. They're the extra die. They're the free die I got to draw that turn. Makes it easier for me to remember the quantities and the dice. So however you want to look at it, but that's how Swarm works, and which is a good thing to know because we have more Swarm on this team.
Sturge, the super rare epic beast from Dungeons & Dragons, four dice on the card, three cost fist. It is, again, the super rare. It has Swarm. If Sturge attacks alone, it cannot be blocked.
Yeah, Sturge is pretty solid of a character. Not being able to block, again, we talked about how unblockable is quickly becoming a new meta. The Sturge is actually neutral, but it does have the monster affiliation, and that is important. Just like the kobold, both of these characters have the monster affiliation. A Sturge is a 1-1, 2-1, or 3-1, and only has a fielding cost at level 3, where you have to pay 1 to get that juicy, juicy, unblockable 3-1 character. So, again, just like kobold, swarm works. You know, one die in the field and everyone you draw is free. But you'll notice that both these characters are fist characters. We'll be using that fist energy to help us do some awesome things later. But more importantly, if you spend the fist on a kobold, it helps you buy Sturge. So they ramp into each other so that you get your swarm on stronger and stronger because it's all the same energy type.
We will go into the character that was so good on this team, we put its name in the title, Starhawk, we talked about Precognitive, that's the one from the Age of Ultron set, earlier in this episode. Two dice on the card, four-cost Mask, Avenger, Guardian of the Galaxy, rare. Team Watch, when you field a character who shares an affiliation with Starhawk, that character and Starhawk both get plus two attack this turn.
Now, you may be looking at these characters and say, there's no way these cards work in conjunction with each other. How is this going to ever work? Well, we'll get to that in just a second, but we talked about Starhawk before, so we know how the Team Watch works. We know that he gets a bump for every character that's fielded, and we know that every character that's fielded gets a bump from him. So we'll have one Starhawk in the field, and when we start fielding our characters that share an affiliation with him, each of them is going to get plus two attack. So how do we make Starhawk share an affiliation with all of our swarm characters? The answer is the infiltrate basic action.
Target character gets plus three defense and gains one team affiliation of your choice until the end of turn. It's from the Age of Ultron set, and it costs three to buy.
Yeah, so what we'll do is, before we field any of our characters, after we've rolled the infiltrate action phase, we infiltrate Starhawk to make him a D&D monster, and then we field all of our swarm characters, because we got a bunch of them, because we had one kobold in the field and one Sturge in the field, and now we have, who knows, six swarm characters that we just happened to draw. So we put six swarm characters in the field. That means Starhawk gets plus 12 attack, and each of those swarm characters that we just fielded are now at least three attack, possibly five attack characters. And then we swing with a, you know, a 16 attack Starhawk and a and 6-3 attack, so 18. So we've got one 16 attack character, and we've got 18 attack from our swarm characters that we're swinging with at the same time. It's just a ton of swarm damage that triggers off that infiltrate going off, and it just is big and fast and powerful, and it's really hard to stop.
Now, we have other pieces on this team that are just sort of supporting the Swarm Hawk, and we'll start with, let's start with Black Widow. We had this character on the other team. This is the Natasha from Age of Ultron. Black Widow can't be blocked unless your opponent spins down one of their character dice. We talked about this character at length, and it's pretty obvious why it's on this team.
Yeah, she's still an Avenger. She still combos with Starhawk on turns that you don't get infiltrate. She also is here if our opponent brings PXG, because this team is a slightly more competitive team, so we're more likely to see a PXG team faced off against this team. So she's mostly just here for the nod to PXG and for the synergy she has with Starhawk in general.
Your plan on this team is to certainly field a lot of characters. The next character on this team is from the Avengers vs. X-Men set. Two dice on the card. Human Torch, Johnny Storm. A four-cost Bolt, Fantastic Four affiliation. Again, uncommon. While Human Torch is active, each time you field a character, Human Torch deals one damage to your opponent and one to a target character.
Yeah, so all truth, all honesty here. Truby, the guy with the awesome facial hair, has a team called Johnny Swarm that he plays a lot, or used to play a lot. I'm not sure what he's up to now. And Truby's team uses Kobold, Sturge, and Human Torch, and it just wins the game with those guys. That team is a really solid, highly competitive team, and so putting Human Torch on this team allows you to go that route if your unblockable Starhawk or overcrushing Starhawk or whatever other versions of winning that you have on this team, if those aren't working, Human Torch, you can just jump to it. It can help you win faster. It can help you clear your opponent's board. It's just a good, solid, it's probably an easier win condition than the Starhawk win condition. But there is a lot of direct damage counter meta that's coming out, especially with Age of Ultron and Captain America. So maybe the Human Torch isn't a 100% best way to go every time character. And so we have the Starhawk win condition or the Human Torch win condition. This guy's amazing, though. You field a sidekick and you do one damage to your opponent and kill your opponent's sidekick. That's a ridiculous two for one.
There is a character that it doesn't seem to get weaker. It seems to be one of the strongest in the game, regardless of what set comes out. We have it on this team. Human Paladin, Lesser Emerald Enclave, 4-cost shield. We have 2 dice on the card. It has experience, meaning it gets +1/+1 when you knock out a monster. While active, your characters in the field cannot be affected by global abilities used by your opponent. Global, pay a shield, reduce the damage you take from a character's ability to 1.
Yep. Human Paladin, he's amazing for all the reasons. First of all, because he's an adventurer, he counters your opponent's kobolds. Then he prevents your kobolds and sturges from being pinged off by, say, magic missile effects. And then if your opponent's playing something crazy like Gabi, you have a shield to reduce the damage. Or Jocasta, you have a shield to reduce the damage to just 1. And that's the trade that, if you reduce a large chunk of damage to 1 and then turn around and just field 1 character, bam, net benefit.
We move to a world champion removal character, Solomon Grundy from the Justice League set, Buried on a Sunday. 2 dice on the card, 5-cost shield. It's a rare. When Solomon Grundy is KO'd other than by damage from an attacker or a blocker, KO an opposing character. If there is a character on your opponent's field that is giving you problems, well, just kill your Solomon Grundy. Boom. Done.
Yep. And it's pretty easy to kill our Solomon Grundy. We only have to pay a bolt and blue eyes him with the blue eyes white dragon and get a discount. So Solomon Grundy, blue eyes, tried and true combination. Thanks, Dean. It's amazing. It's the way we go.
Yeah, blue eyes white dragon, monstrous dragon from Yu-Gi-Oh! Set, 1 die on the card, 7-cost bolt. Global, pay a bolt and knock out one of your monsters to reduce the cost of your next die you buy by 2 energy. So it's one of those ones that you can use on your turn or your opponent's turn, and, it's going to work. And that's why we love the Blue Eyes and Solomon Grundy combination.
And also, for 1 bolt and 1 fist, you can buy a Sturge if you KO one of your extra kobolds. You KO an extra kobold, you spend a fist and a bolt, and your kobold is prepped to field next turn, and you just bought a Sturge. And that's why kobold synergizes so well into Sturge, because their price difference is exactly 2 different.
If you are playing this team and you think, oh, hey, I've got a 16 attack Starhawk, oh, wait, I'm going to get chump locked. Well, we have a solution for you. Anger Issues, the basic action from the Justice League set. Target character gets +3 attack. Oh, so now Starhawk has 19 attack? Well, that's great. But he also has Overcrush now for this turn, and we'll also add in a global just to make it even more fun. Pay a fist, target character gets +1 attack until the end of turn.
And you're not looking to do 19 damage with the Overcrushing Starhawk. You're just making him so big and so powerful that they have to block with multiple characters, so they can't block your 6 attacking, 3 attack characters. So it's, do you want to take 19 from this Overcrushing Starhawk, or do you want to take 18 from these other 6 characters you can't block?
And it's a decision you don't know how to answer, because it's just so crazy.
Yeah. Plus, kobolds and sturges give us tons of fists. So even if we're attacking with, say, a Black Widow Natasha and we missed our kobolds and sturges, we can now just pump all those fists into an unblockable Natasha. So there's synergy and strategy all around.
I can just imagine somebody sitting at the table with their hands over their face, just rocking back and forth, going, "Do I take 19, or do I let the 18 damage go through, or do I take like 12 from?" And then their head explodes, and then the tournament ends because it's pretty messy.
Wasn't that you last weekend?
That was like earlier today.
Oh, okay.
This is a very frustrating team to play, but it is so much fun to play. And what we've done as well is, if you have checked out the reservepool.com and you have clicked on the article for today's podcast, you can actually watch a video that was made by Shadowmeld and some other folks as well. Who helped you out with the video?
Dylan, and then JT showed up to give us his opinion.
Yeah, so Digital Dylan coming through again. If you missed his debut video that he produced for us on Saturday called In the Field, you missed a great matchup between Shadowmeld and Dylan. I won't give away who won, but let me just say it was an epic game, and I can't wait for round 2 between those two guys. But also today, we have posted a video called In the Lab, which is going to show you exactly how to play this Swarmhawk team. And like I said, very frustrating to play against, but a lot of fun to actually play this team. So lots of video content coming up, as well as a lot of new podcast content as well. Swarmhawk, man, great idea. This is just a lot of fun, and I like the fact that you took Starhawk and made him not just useful, but you made him interesting to me.
Hey, it's all about finding interesting ways to make cards combine. Now, I will say that one of the best ways to win the game is to have the fewest cards needed to make a good lethal combination, and this is definitely not one of those reliable ways to win the game. But it's consistent, and that sometimes is more important. Because, you know, if you get a fist, it's still damage. If you get a kobold, hey, look, that's more damage. So it's quite solid in that way. It may not have all the answers to all the things out there, and that's something you'll have to tweak. As always, these teams are not highly polished. They're not designed to beat every deck in your meta. Who knows what your local store has? Rare Wasp probably would be bad for this team, although there aren't that many globals, so who knows? But yeah, pick up the team, make it your own, take it to your local competition, and have fun with it. And the only way you can really get good at a team like this is just practice, 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 and make it yours. Make it work against whatever your local meta is. And so, good luck. Enjoy the team. And one last thing. We usually take requests on teams, on inspiration, things people need. I'll tell you what, someone made a request for a Tarrasque team, and next episode, I'm bringing a ridiculously awesome Tarrasque team. So far, it's 2-0 in my online games, and I'm probably going to keep the team around as one that I just unload and play with new people and maybe people who I'm frustrated with and really want to beat. So tune in next time too.
Well, keep in mind, that's 2-0 as of this recording. He has some matches scheduled for later today. Tomorrow, we're going to have a lot of people on Vassal playing online, and many of them are going to have to deal with this Tarrasque team. So by the time we do this episode next week, it's probably going to be more than 2-0. It's probably going to be, if you're a wrestling fan, it's going to make Goldberg's streak look just pathetic and non-existent. I am so pumped about this Tarrasque team, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to play, so make sure you tune in next week to check that out. Plus, we're going to have a brand new main event team. I won't tell you what it is just yet. You're going to have to wait until you see the great artwork that has been created by Nick Sutphin for next week's episode. And as well, we want to thank him for the great art that he submitted for Swarmhawk this week. And each and every week, you're going to see some great art. You're going to have some great teams, some great analysis, some great videos to go with. We are going to have a blast. You are just getting started here with the Reserve Pool Network. Shadowmeld, thanks again for a great show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I love throwing to you when you least expect it. It's just so much fun for me.
So this is where I normally would say, later.
No, no, no. We're a few seconds away from that. Thank you again for listening to the Prep Area here and watching the videos on our YouTube channel. Make sure you subscribe. Read the blogs at thereservepool.com. Necromantister's got some great stuff there as well, as do all the other members on the website that are providing blogs. Check the articles, read everything that we have on the website, and we'll see you back on Thursday with a brand new The Reserve Pool podcast. Thanks to Dave for the preview. So much happening. My mind's going to explode again. That's all the time we have. Bye for now.
Later.